Good to see you again. It's good to be back together. Thank you, Patrick, for leading us in those songs. And as we think about the love of God and what He's done for us, it's an amazing thought that God would go so far and do so much for me, a sinner. But in the book of Romans, Paul tells me that while I was yet in sin, Christ died for me. Think about the amazing power of that love. Tonight, we're looking at another of Paul's epistles. We're continuing to look at Paul's letter to the Corinthian church, that first letter that we have to that group of brethren. And we are looking tonight in chapter number 9. In chapter number 9, Paul begins this message, this particular portion of the message, by recording these words. He says, "Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you. For you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord." Now, it's interesting, in chapter 8, as we looked a few weeks ago, Paul talks to them about not causing division over their liberties and how that just because you have the freedom to do something doesn't mean you should. And he talks directly about eating those that meat that could be bought, could be eaten from the marketplace, which was originally set aside for idolatry. And, you know, he goes on at the end of chapter 8, and he makes that famous statement, if meat causes my brother to stumble, I'll never eat meat again. And so as he begins chapter 9, it's on the heels of those thoughts. And it's an interesting couple of verses there, because what Paul seems to be doing is defending his apostleship. There seem to be those who maybe have challenged his apostleship in some way. And as he goes on in chapter 9, you'll kind of see that, how some have, now we're not told exactly what they said or did, but they seem to have challenged him in some way. And so tonight, I want to think about this chapter, and what is Paul referring to? How is he being challenged? Now as we go on, what we see is Paul tells us some rights he has as an apostle, as an evangelist. Some things that he was deserving of, had right to if he wanted to. But then, on the heels of that, he'll actually talk about the reason he surrendered those rights. So basically, he's giving you a clear example of his own life, from his own life, about what it means to give up liberties in your life to help others in their journey with Christ. And hopefully tonight, as we explore these, explore this chapter, that'll make more sense. But when we think about what the rights, what Paul's rights as an apostle were, and why he does, and why he surrenders them, number one, you'll note right away, he defends his right to share in the blessings of the church. Notice there in verse number 3, as he begins that verse, he says, "This is my defense to those who would examine me." So it seems to imply that there were those who were challenging Paul in some way in regard to his apostleship, in regards to his preaching and teaching. And he says, "This is my defense. I'm going to defend myself here, and I'm going to put it out here before you." And then he goes on in verse number 4 to say, "Do we not have the right to eat and drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living?" Now, interesting questions he puts out here. He begins by talking about, again, the right to eat and drink. Now, maybe that's a reference back to the previous chapter, or maybe it's got more to do with what he's going to talk about later on. And we'll explore that in just a minute. The first thing he brings up is this idea of having a wife. Now, I don't know. It seems he points this out specifically. So I'm going to assume, this is my assumption, my opinion, is that somebody had gone directly at him about this particular issue. Now, we know from earlier, Paul's not married. He doesn't have a wife. Go back to chapter 7 and you look in verses 7 and 8 when he's talking about marriage and divorce and being and also those who are not married, the unmarried. He says in verse number 7, I wish that all were as I myself am. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and another of another. And one of another. To the unmarried and widows, I say that it is good for them, notice this, to remain single as I am. So it's interesting, Paul brings this up in chapter 9 when he's not married and he seems to have no intention to ever being married. Now when he mentions the brothers of Jesus, the other apostles, and Cephas, of course we know Cephas is Peter. It's just another name for Peter. We know that Peter was married. Go back to Matthew chapter 8 and verse 14. There the text talks about his mother-in-law. Now, it just goes to realization, if you got a mother-in-law, you have a wife. And so he was a married man. And Paul seems to indicate that his wife was traveling with him, that she was an active partner with him in his evangelism. Like she was going there, she was being with him and such. And he also makes reference that that may have been the case with Jesus' other brother or his brothers, that they were also married and their wives were traveling with them as well. So the first thing he points out is he has the right to marry if he so chooses. Now notice as he goes on, go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I want you to notice what else he says. He moves to another subject. Now, verse number 8, he says, do I say these things on human authority? So, you know, Paul sometimes talks about his opinions. In chapter 8, he did that very thing. Chapter 7, he did that very thing. But in chapter 7, when he referred to his opinions, what did he always do? He said, this is my opinion. But what? Notice what he says here. Do I speak on human authority? And then he goes on to say, does not the law say the same? Okay, say what? Well, notice verse number 9. For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain. That's an interesting quote. Now, I challenge you to go back to Deuteronomy 25 and 4 and look at the context. You read in that context about how you treat one another, and when somebody does something against you, that you're not allowed to punish them too severely. And just in the middle of that context, Moses places this verse. One thing I'm going to challenge myself about is, without Paul's clarification of what's going on, it'd be very difficult to really understand why that verse sits there. Go back and read it. I'll let you do that when you get home. But go back and read that, and you'll notice that verse just kind of sits there, and then he goes on to talk about something else. But Paul looks at that, and notice he draws out more meaning to it. He goes on in verse number 9. He says, is it for the ox or for the oxen that God is concerned? He says, is this really about an ox? No. That's kind of a rhetorical question, isn't it? He says, does he not speak for our sake. It was written for our sake because the plowman should plow in hope and the thresher thresh in hope of sharing in the crop. And notice verse 11. If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it not too much, or is it, I'm sorry, is it too much if we reap material things from you? So now he's talking about something different. This isn't about marriage, but now he's talking about paying an evangelist or seeking financial support from the church. He says, if others share this rightful claim on you, do we not even more? So he's saying basically that the evangelist who works at evangelism, the teacher who works at teaching the gospel, deserves to share in the material blessings of the church. You notice he says something similar in 1 Timothy chapter 5. He makes another quote of this same text. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17, he says, let the elders who rule over you, who rule well be considered, notice this, worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain, and the laborer deserves his wages. He makes the same quote. Now here in 1 Timothy chapter 5, he applies it to the elder who's devoted himself to preaching. So he says, I have this right among you to seek after support. Now, I don't know. It seems to me to be that there were those who maybe were challenging Paul that he didn't deserve to be supported. But I want you to notice, if you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 12, notice how he ends this, though. He says, nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything, now notice, rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. So there were obviously those maybe in Corinth who were challenging this idea that he deserved to be financially supported. So what does Paul say? Rather than put an obstacle in your way of hindering you from being obedient to God, I don't want any support. And so Paul surrenders this right, but he had a right to it. But he says, I'm going to surrender that right. He says something very similar, and I love the way he words it in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. If you begin there at verse 5, I want you to notice again what he says to the Thessalonian brethren. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 5, for we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with pretext for greed. Notice again the context of what we're talking about. He says, we never came in a greedful way or in a greedy way. God is witness. Verse 6, nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others. Now notice, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. Again, he's referring back to that. We had a right to ask these things of you. We had that right. But notice, but we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. So you notice there, Paul says we have a right. God has given us this ability, this authority to ask of you. To ask of your support. Not just emotionally, not just in prayer, but we could have come and asked of you for financial support. He says, but I'm not going to do that. Again, Paul is surrendering that right. Now notice why. So he had a right to share in the blessing of the church, but he felt compelled to preach the gospel. Notice verse number 15 back in the context here in 1 Corinthians 9. He says, "But I have made no use of these rights, nor am I writing to secure any such provision." I'm not writing this to make you feel guilty. I'm writing this to defend myself to those who would accuse me. Now, there's an important reason for that. Paul isn't going to ask for support, but what about the next evangelist who desperately needs it? He wants to clarify the position of God in this matter. But I'm not going to take that right from you. I'm not going to pressure you with my right here. "For I would rather die than anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting." Well, what's he boasting about? "For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. For necessity is laid on me." Now notice this. "Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel." And then notice the end there, end of verse number 18. He says, he begins by saying, "What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel." Notice again there in verse number 16, "Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel." What's at the heart of Paul's mission? What's at the heart of his desire? It's to preach the gospel. I'm reminded of Jeremiah chapter 20 and verse 9. Jeremiah the prophet says in verse number 9 of chapter 20, "If I say I will not make mention, I will not mention him or speak any more in his name, there is in my heart as it were a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I am weary of holding it in, and I cannot." He had a message to preach. And he said, I can't not stop. It burns me. You ever been so passionate about something? You know, in politics, there are a lot of passionate people. And one of the things I admire, even those that I disagree with politically, is their passion. There's nothing worse than an indifferent person, somebody who just doesn't care, right? Doesn't care about life, doesn't care about the things in their life. Apathy is a terrible thing that just eats away at you. If you want to believe something, believe in it passionately. There are a lot of passionate people in politics, and at the end of politics, what is it? It's empty, it's vain. Politics come and go. But what remains the same is Jesus Christ. What remains the same is the church. You ever been really excited about something? I remember, y'all may have seen a Christmas story. You remember the Christmas story and how Ralphie would listen to those radio programs? And they were going to send him something in the mail, and it was a special surprise. And he was excited, and he'd run out to the mailbox every day, and he'd look for it. Finally, it came, and it was a special decoder pen. You remember he went in the bathroom, and he wouldn't let his brother in. He's sitting out there with his legs twisted, trying to get in, knocking on the door, banging, and he's sitting there going through it, decoloring it. The end of it, it said, "Drink more Ovaltine." And he just threw it down, right? Completely deflated. All the thing he'd put his hope into, his excitement, his passion, and ended up like that. You ever felt like that? You ever had something you were just so excited about, and when you got it or when you experienced it, really wasn't what you thought it was going to be? That's the way most of the things in life are. But when it comes to the gospel, when it comes to Jesus Christ and the church, it's not going to be like that. Those things that leave us unfulfilled, it ain't going to be like that. When Jesus returns, for those who have anxiously awaited His return, you're going to feel a fulfillment that you've never experienced in your life. And that's Paul. That's his passion in life. That's why in Romans 1 and verse 16, he says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ." I mean, when I read those words, I just feel the impact of his passion coming across. I remember when Rob came a few weeks ago and he did that evangelism seminar. I don't know if you're like me, but just talking to him, you can see how passionate he is about teaching people how to teach people, right? And how to evangelize. I mean, he is passionate about that. Why? Because he knows the importance of it. How passionate are we about the gospel? Are we as passionate as Paul? Paul gave up his rights because he was compelled to preach the gospel, and he wouldn't allow any obstacle to get in the way of that, thereby making him a servant, himself a servant to all. You go on here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 again, verse 19, he says, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. To the Jews I became a Jew," or "I became as a Jew, in order to win the Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside of the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but being under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessing. To the Jew I became a Jew, to the weak I became weak, to those outside the law I became as one outside the law." You go read the book of Acts and you see that so clearly. In his actions, right? Whatever he needed to do to relate to someone, he would do it without violating the Word of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, just a couple chapters later, he writes in verse number 8, he says, "Lastly of all, as to one untimely born, he appeared also to me, for I am least of the apostles, unworthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am. And His grace toward me was not in vain." And you get a sense of the power of the gospel on Paul. He goes on to say, "On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is in me." What was Paul's drive in his life? To be whatever he needed to be for people. To serve however he could serve them in order to win them to Jesus Christ. I can't help but think about John chapter 13. I can imagine the apostles sitting around the Passover or preparing for the Passover meal, and Jesus girding himself, putting that robe or that apron around him, getting out that bucket of water or whatever it was, and beginning to wash their feet, of how stunned they must have been. And you can see it in Peter's reaction. He says, "You're not washing my feet." Why? "Because you're my Lord. You're my master. My master doesn't serve me in that way." Jesus says, "If you don't let me wash your feet, then you can't be clean." Notice the end of that context there. Verse number 12, it says, "When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garment and resumed his place, he said to them, 'Do you understand what I have done? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet, for I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them.'" Jesus is basically saying the same message Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians 9. Be prepared to serve people in any way necessary to teach them the gospel. Is there anything more important than that? It's about winning souls. And see, Paul was in it to win it. To win the soul. To win his race. 1 Corinthians 9, again in verse 24, Paul says, "Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do not receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." You see, Paul knew the race wasn't over. That he had more to do. There was more God needed him to do. He knew more than anything else, he had to finish the race. In Philippians chapter 3, in discussing the difficulties of his life and the things of his past, the things he regretted, he said, "Brothers," verse number 13 of Philippians 3, "Brothers, I do not consider that I have made it my own. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead." That idea of I'm pressing on in my race. I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. You run a race. When's the most important time of the race? It's the end, isn't it? It's when you see the tape ahead of you. What happens if you run a race and you run 9/10 of the way and you quit? You lose. You can't win a race you don't finish. That's why runners will always reserve a little bit in the tank. Because they know when they see that at the end, when I can visualize it and I know I'm almost there, I'm going to push myself that extra bit to push myself across. Paul says, "I'm pushing myself." And things were not easy for him. You read his letters, his second letter to Timothy, chapter 4 and verse 7. He says, "I fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I've kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. Not only to me, but also all those who loved his appearing." Paul was focused on one thing in his life. He had one goal in mind. Everything else didn't matter if he didn't finish that race. It all meant nothing if he didn't cross that line. At the 1968 Olympics, An hour after the marathon's winner crossed the finish line, Tanzanian John Stephen Akwari limped across the finish line. Injured in a fall early in the race, he was asked why he didn't quit. He said, "My country didn't send me 7,000 miles to start this race. My country sent me to finish." Jesus Christ did not die for you to be baptized and to quit. He didn't die for you to be baptized. He died for you to get you to heaven. Now, is it important to start the race? Absolutely. You can't win a race you don't start. And I don't care what race you start, if you don't finish, you cannot win. I don't know when my time is going to come up. Neither do you. I'm looking for that tape. And I want to be able to push myself at the end across that finish line. I want to have enough passion and momentum to carry myself across. Christianity's not a sprint, it's a marathon, isn't it? When we finish our life, will we have won the race? Will we have completed our race? Do we have that promise of a crown? God's given us a lot of liberty in this life, hasn't He? A lot of opportunity. We were born as children of choice. You know, your dog doesn't have choice. Your cat doesn't have choice. There's a certain line for them. They walk. They get to the end of it, right? Horses, cows, all of God's lovely creation. There was one creation that was given the opportunity to choose God or choose Himself. We have a lot of liberties. God's given us a lot of range of choice. I want to use my choices to help me get across the race. I want to use my choices to help others get across the finish line. I want to be like Paul, and I don't want to become an obstacle. I don't want to allow my actions and my words to become an obstacle to someone else. May we all strive to be what we need to be to save the many, especially ourselves. Jesus Christ has promised us so much, and He has always been found faithful. He's promised to give us an opportunity to seek after Him, to seek after His blood and His forgiveness. It is only through Jesus Christ that we can even enter the race. It is only by the power of Jesus we can finish the race. Will you run along with Him tonight? If you're not a child of God, we invite you, encourage you to make that right tonight, to obey the gospel, to become a child of God. If you are and you're not doing what you should, you've quit running the race, you're running somewhere else, come back. Come back to God. Whatever need, if we can help in any way, please come as together we stand and sing.